so that we can listen to the following speaker, who is Professor Crispin. The earliest Mesopotamian script and the dawn of phonetics.
Dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, this lecture is, of course, meant as a challenge. A challenge for all you to comment on what I want to brought you this afternoon. The period of my research starts at the so-called Uruk IV period. At the end of the Uruk period in archaeology, between 3400 and 3200 BC, the city of Uruk grew quite spectacularly in size. One of the reasons could have been the retreat of Uruk population groups from the colonies in northwest Mesopotamia alongside the river Euphrates to Uruk and from the Susiana, Khuzestan, southwest Iran. I'm speaking about this area of colonies from the Uruk period and here the Susiana in south and here of course Uruk. The reason for this retreat is a point of discussion among archaeologists. But whatever the reason may have been, the result was a big city with impressive architecture like the Hall of Columns and other architectural remains. But one of the main pillars of the system is the redistribution of goods and commodities leaded by the ruler of Uruk, the En, beautifully rendered in the so-called Uruk phase. Here you see a depiction of the redistribution system. Here is the reconstruction of the ruler of Uruk, the En, with a servant before him and possibly the queen representing Inanna, the goddess of one of the main female goddess of Uruk. Shortly before 3400, there had been invented a new system of number registration on tablets, the so-called number tablets. These number tablets are in fact squeezed tablets with number notations, and they follow the so-called clay balls with the tokens inside. The earliest examples of the script of Uruk, the so-called proto-cuneiform script, date from slightly before 3200 BC, and they have been found almost exclusively within the Inanna temple complex, number 9. These early documents are difficult to put into a sound chronology because the buildings belonging to the Uruk 5 and 4 strata are difficult to reconstruct comprehensively, and because the documents are found as deposits together with other debris in earlier strata than Uruk 4AB, from which they must have come. Besides the find spots, paleography is still the main criterion to distinguish these tablets from later ones. As for the find spots of the earlier tablets, most of them are situated in the center of the Inanna complex, and especially from the so-called Red Temple. Here's the reconstruction from the Red Temple, and the neighborhood of this spot there are found a lot of tablets. Administrative tablets from the bulk of the earliest proto-cuneiform texts, but among them are also lexical texts. The lexical lists belonging to the sphere of the scribal school were very important for their standardization of early script. The German excavators have found very few lexical texts belonging to the Uruk 4 stratum Uruk 4a, 11 among hundreds of administrative ones. Research of this lexical text is for the most part depending on the Berlin team of Robert Englund, Hans Niesen, and Peter Damroff. I think that I am speaking not only for myself to express my admiration for the high standard of publication of the archaic text of Uruk and the research involved. The stratum following Uruk 4a, stratum 3, contained far more lexical texts, around 700. Most of them can be attributed to lexical series of a thematic type, such as lists of professions, fish, trees, etc. The level of standardization of these lexical lists is higher than in Uruk 4a. Therefore, most colleagues use the term canonization for this phase. It is clear that the Uruk educational and scholarly system of lexical lists had a great impact on Mesopotamian society everywhere, and everywhere in the ancient Near East of the third millennium, scribes had to learn these sometimes complex lists. Here you see a school exercise from Uruk 3. Only after 1800 BC, a new system of lexical lists was introduced, mainly in the scribal schools of Nippur and later on in the whole Near East. And this tradition will be the topic of my colleague Gebhard Seltz, which he has brought this morning. The lexical lists contain, besides logographic signs or logograms, also phonograms. A logogram refers to one word or more words with certain meanings. The script sign is in the earliest phases of Mesopotamian script. This sign is almost discernible, mostly discernible pictogram representing one of the meanings of the logogram. For example, the pictogram of a rising sun between the mountains representing the idea sun, day, or time. You see here the sun coming up between the mountain, and in the Uruk period you can put here in numbers to indicate the days or month. The phonograms represent a sound, originally the pronunciation of one of the words represented in the pictogram. In the more or less controlled context of lexical lists, in most cases we deal with thematic lists, with groups of words with the same meaning, the phonograms form an important indication of which language is used writing the earliest Uruk texts. The main part of my paper will be a discussion of the phonograms attested in Uruk 4a and Uruk 3 lexical lists in order to come to a conclusion about the language behind the Uruk 4a and Uruk 3 texts. I will do it on the hand of some examples from lexical lists from Uruk, and I refer to my handout, which is just distributed here. First, we will discuss the so-called Lu A list or Lu list. It starts, as already mentioned, with a special sign, which is logographic. It's a sign apparently has to do with the first line of the wood list, which also has this same sign, which means box tree. Apparently it's a kind of staff used by these high officials to underline their authority. When they look at this sign, it don't looks to be, it resembles the later shape of the sign Akthri, which means fleas. In this case, it's in the context of fashioning things, like here, it's the fashioning of the smith of the silver. So we have to do with someone who is fashioning silver objects. So it's very likely that we have to do here with something producing something. And therefore the link with the Sumerian word ak, to make, to fashion, is possible. The second example is line 55 here, where you see a complex sign inscribed with the sign Ngar. This sign is in later period often represented for, is often used for the sign Golga, which means advice. So it could be an indication of an advisor. Ish is a highly debated sign because it is twice in the list. Here one and here another one. They are slightly different, as you see here. And Bob Englund makes a difference in his lists. Some of these later, this sign is later used for a kind of shepherd, or and the other is used for a high official at the court. We know from Ebla lists that it is pronounced as Ishenu, or Ishen. So the sound Ish is definitely there. The other, and as for here, it's unknown what's the pronunciation. The original picture must be a pit with sand or a hill with sand, which is pronounced in Sumerian Ishi as a pit of sand and Kush, which is a hill of sand. The last example of a phonetic writing is here, the sign, later sign Kush 7 with the She sign in it, which could be a phonetic indication. And you often see that when there is a phonetic indication in the script, it is no matter what kind of vowel follows, but it's only the indication of the sh in this case. Here you see an example of the so-called city list, which has also a relation with emblems, which you have found on the so-called city seals. And the order of the signs is the same as in the lexical lists about cities. So let's go now to the cities. As expected before, in the names of cities, you find a lot of phonographic writing. Because long we know that most Sumerian cities are not Sumerian at all. They belong to another language, a substrate language, or more substrate languages, like Gonzalo Rubio thinks. Here I have a list of some phonetic writings. First, up, which is used in Apsu here, and another time another Apsu. The reading for up for this pictogram, which is a temple on a hill, on a platform, could be derived from the word Apsu itself, since this is beside the subterranean ocean, it's also the name of a temple. So that could be the reason why you can also read this symbol normally read Esh 3 as up. The second is Am 3, which is here, which is one of the Amma signs. Amma signs is highly debated because it means also mother. But it is a question whether it's mother. In this case, we just saw from Bob Englund the colophon where Amma also figures, and it's fairly likely that we don't have to do with Amma mother, with in fact with Amma 5, which means storage within the house. And possibly, but that gives me also the conclusion that here on definitely is used as a kind of phonetic indicator, but otherwise it's unknown whether you have to read it Amma or Lagab. Then Ash in cities. Also, this sign is lately debated as whether the reading Durum is correct. Bob reads it now as, I think, Bob 3a. So some people left the original hypothesis that we have to do with an Akkadian word, Durum, wall or fortress. But there are other arguments for thinking still that the sign Ash, the number one, is inscribed here, can be read Urum. There is another city name, Ur 3, written in it, this sign, this number one, and it's apparently read Urum, like the later word for father-in-law. Let's pass by somewhat more quickly. Here she finds an indication ba behind this complicated name, this combination of Ashgab and ba. You find here Sheshfor as an indication for the city of Shushin or Shusha, the city of Susa in Khuzestan, Elam. Git, the Bu sign, is used here for, let's have a look, here is here, the Bu sign is used as a phonetic indicator, and so on. Let's go to another lexical series, cities 2, this is the second part because it had too few room for that, Su, and Su is also used. Utu, which is a factor picture of a field of grass, of pasture. Urutu, for the city of Quara. And Uru 3, as an indication for the first city name, Urim, or Ur. Let's go to the series metal. Some signs are really interesting. Here we find two complicated signs, which is the Lagab sign with written in it Ugar, the Ugar sign. Ugar means, in fact, is the picture of the eyebrow, and I don't know exactly the connection with the word of eye or eyebrow, but it's apparently also used for the word of field or collection of fields. But here, apparently, it stands for Agar Abar, which is a kind of metal. The first one is a little bit, perhaps a wild guess, since Aden is represented by a very peculiar sign, which is not mentioned at all at the original meaning of Aden, which is fields or field outside the city, a terrain far beyond the city. It looks to be a vessel standing on the ground, on the quay sign. And it's largely comparable with Bahar, which means potter, and with the sign Bapir, which means beer bread. So my suggestion is that it also has to do something with making spirits. Because the din in Eden could be connected with Gesh Din, tree of life, and Kashdin, which is read Kuru, which means beer of spiritual drinking. The last one is She, connected with She Lu 3, which is an indication for metal known. The known pronunciation from later time is She Lu. The tribute list is one very interesting list among the lexical lists of Uruk, since some scholars, like Joan Westenholz, think that we have to deal here with the first literary text. The starting point, the beginning of the text, looks to be literary text. The day, the first day on which the place of ritual of the oracles, Adhal is a kind of oracle, the day the Abrik, that is a high official in the temple, do something, and then comes a list of products. I don't think it's literary at all, but it is a kind of test to make a list of tributes, so that still the term tribute list is valuable for this lexical list. You see here an inventory of what I think are the phonetic readings in this list, and you'll find it in my handout. Here is this schematic survey of the content of this tribute list. You see here the beginning, and you see the list is repeated once, and again here is are some new products and a kind of repetition here. The vessel list gives us the two following possible phonetic indications. Za'a, here behind the word for wool and the word for textile with combined is the loom sign and here the aza sign. A is water and za apparently comes from zal, which means to flow or to melt. So it is well known and well possible that we have to do with the first attestation of the tukguza sign. Another possibility is here that we have still to do with our containers with their content. And you see here all kinds of products written in these jars. And here we have to do with a jar with inside a written kas. And you could say, why don't they write kas in the normal way? Huh? But it is just after it. So it is a clear indication that reading kas for kash, beer, kas is road, crossing, so road, is a phonetic indication of the content of this jar. The series wood has a lot, had quite some phonetic indication, since Mesopotamia has almost no long trees on the alluvial soil. That's why they have to go to the go abroad to get some really great trees for overroofing their calluses and so on. And I think that's the reason why there are a lot of foreign words in this list. Some signs are ending, some combinations are ending in um. So it might be an indication that we have to do here with Semitic words, early Semitic words. And it's not unlike here, you have the same sign as the beginning of the Lu lists, the Taskarin tree, which is also used for num two sign. So apparently for the stick, the staff, this official has in his hands. So there is a phonetic indication, gum. Another strange indication is here you have the head of a kind of gazelle with the ma indication here. It could mean that we have to do here with the majda, which is a gazelle. And here used for a Semitic word for a tree, the arvanum or amanum. And the noon sign could have been here a phonetic indication for the Semitic ending noon. The birds series has two, as far as I know now, two phonetic indication, ir here, and here is the millstone, the upper and the lower millstone, which is read ur. With the unidentified lexical lists or text belonging to the unidentified lexical list, we come to the Uruk 4a phase. So we see here, we pass by some elements in these older lists. You see, Om3 is there, V6, Nutu, and so you can all see it in the handout under the numbers there. And also forerunners of Lu A give us the same indication. Well, after giving you an impression of some phonetic writing, you can draw a kind of syllabary of the Uruk 3 phase, which you find on the handout. You see several CV signs are there, several VC signs are there, and also combinations of CVC, CVCP signs. But that brings us to a tentative conclusion. On the basis of the Uruk 3 material, we can safely say that Sumerian is the language of Ur 3 lexical texts. For the Uruk 4a phase, things turn out to be more complicated. But since Atz can stand for father, Sumerian's Ada, Ish and Uruk 3 might be pronounced Ish, and Sumerian sandpit is Ishi, and so on, makes it very likely that also the language of Uruk 4, at least in the texts, is also Sumerian. But that we may rather tentative. That means that Uruk 4a where I'm right, is the terminus Antequem, the Sumerian half-come to southern Mesopotamia, from possible the western Iranian territory. And that they reached the highest levels in the society of Uruk, so that their language became the language of Uruk scribal schools and Mesopotamian society in general. Thank you for your attention.